right. By Grabthaw's Hammer. What a podcast.
Hey, why is the microphone on the other side of those chompy crunchers? Wait, who wrote this episode? This was badly written. I'm not doing this.
This was badly written, yes. Welcome to Good Story 68.
A good story is hard to find.
That's right. It's a podcast that we do. And we'll do it and get out of here before someone kills Guy.
Oh, golly, yeah.
We're going to talk about a movie that I just love. It's called Galaxy Quest. Big fan of this movie. Who directed it anyway? Dean Parasot.
Who I'd never heard of, but God bless him.
Indeed. Oh, for sure.
I don't know anyone who has seen this movie who doesn't love it unless they never heard of Star Trek.
Yeah, and it's clearly a Star Trek. I mean, that's what they're talking about the entire time is Star Trek. And all the fandom around it and all the actors, you know, that have become their own, you know, personalities outside of Star Trek.
It's a spoof and a satire, but it's also so lovingly done that it's also a tribute, which I think is so unusual.
Yeah,
that they could combine both those things.
Hey, I'm here on IMDb and I clicked on that director's name, mm-hmm. and it looks like he directed Red 2, which is a movie that I wanted to see but never did at the theater. Did you happen to see that one?
No, I saw the first one. I saw Red, but not Red 2.
I have not seen
Red. The first one was enough.
Was it? Well, it looked like it would be pretty funny.
Yeah, it was amusing if you didn't ask for a lot out of it. You know, the four older super spy thriller people who are Helen Mirren, Bruce Willis, that group, who are off to do some adventure and save the world. But it wasn't something where I really felt like I needed to see everybody do it again.
Hmm.
Although Helen Mirren was unbelievably wonderful. She was just so funny.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
But anyway.
But yeah, so the director, he's done some Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's done some Monk, the TV show Monk, which has Tony Shalhoub in it that is also in there. He's done a couple episodes of The Good Wife, which I know that you've enjoyed that
one. I love that show.
Yeah. So anyway.
Well, and this movie is kind of interesting because I still remember seeing the first ads for it, and we looked at it and went, Tim Allen in something called Galaxy Quest, huh? Because he's hit or miss on the movies he picks.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it's for every The Santa Claus, there's something that's awful usually,
mm-hmm.
or maybe two things that are awful, from our opinion.
Right,
but then we saw Sigourney Weaver was in it and went, well, wait a minute. Hold, what? And so when we went, that's where I was first introduced knowingly to Sam Rockwell,
who
plays Guy Fleegman.
Yeah.
And I was like, who is this guy? Ha ha. And when you start looking around, he's in all sorts of stuff, but he is such a chameleon and such an excellent actor that he kind of just sinks into any role, and he himself as a personality doesn't necessarily stand out, which is such an unusual trait. And I'm a huge fan of his.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. Did you see Moon?
Oh, yes.
Excellent. Yeah.
Is that not amazing?
Yeah, that was a terrific movie.
It's someday, depending on how long we go on and what we want to watch.
Well, forever. We're not going to stop.
Oh, well, then we'll watch it and talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll be going all the way to the very end of the shelves that we have. Here's a movie we haven't spoken about.
Whatever technology is out there.
This one was behind the TV. Oh, shoot. But yeah, I agree, you know. So yeah, in this movie, we've got Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, Sam Rockwell. Did you happen to notice, I didn't know if you were an Office watcher or not, but I don't think you were. But
oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Rainn Wilson is in this movie, who plays Dwight Schrute.
Oh, who
so
is he?
You can play Spot Dwight. He's one of the aliens.
Well, see, you said that, and I thought he must have been an alien.
Yeah.
They changed those people's appearances just enough to make them not look right. I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Commander. Jeez.
Wow, help that's us. Really good.
You're our only hope.
And I'm clapping right now with my hands going up and down. just a little long because I can't quite manage it.
Oh, boy. Well, so, yeah, so what the movie's about is Galaxy Quest is a TV show that is not currently on the air. It was back in the 80s is what they say in the movie. Mm-hmm. And Tim Allen, Sigourney Weaver, Alan Rickman, Tony Shalhoub, they're people who, they're actors that were in there. Just like in Star Trek, you know, you've got Shatner and Nimoy and DeForest Kelly and all them. And they've now, their life now is going to these conventions and having people go crazy. Yeah, that's their career. And they sign autographs.
What kind of career is that? Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It's tough. You know, you got to wonder what on earth the Star Trek actors thought when this started, you know? I just can't only imagine, you know, it's like, you guys are here to see me and all I'm going to do is stand up here and talk about this show that I did that lasted for 3 years.
Well, I kind of thought I never thought about it from that point of view, but I think the way they showed those people at the convention, it showed a normal progression, because I can see at first when, you know, Star Trek was on the air for 3 years, the people who loved it fervently, and that's why they started having these conventions. And I can see the people going, yay, you liked what we did. Mm-hmm. But as time goes on and they don't move on into other roles for the most part, then T.J. Hooker aside or whatever that show was, then it becomes, without them realizing, a life of its own.
Yeah,
to where they're used to going to these things, and then they themselves become the microcosm of the office workers, in a sense, that have been together too long and don't have enough fresh blood, to where there's all the bickering and they all know each other's patterns. It's like a family of, you know, dysfunctional people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was so brilliantly shown, where they're all waiting for Tim Allen to show up, and, you know, they're able to quote each other's complaints and the problems, you know, Alan Rickman's, has Alexander had his crisis
his
yet? Oh,
yet.
I see it right on time, you know, as he's running out the door.
Yep.
I was on the stage.
What happened?
Yeah.
I was Richard III.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. And it's funny, and you know, Tim Allen is clearly Captain Kirk type.
Yeah.
And, or William Shatner type, I should say. And Alan Rickman is a combination of Leonard Nimoy and Patrick Stewart is what I would say.
Oh.
You know, because Leonard Nimoy, he had the makeup on, you know, for the Mr. Spock. And Leonard Nimoy went through a period in his life where he was running away from Mr. Spock as fast as he possibly could. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he even wrote a book called I Am Not Spock.
Right.
Because he was having trouble getting roles. And, you know, of all of the Star Trek actors, I would say he was the most talented as an actor, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, for him to have trouble getting roles because everybody's like, we don't really want Mr. Spock in that role, which was horrible.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and he was his character was one that everybody was very attracted to. It was very intriguing.
Right.
And that's very much like Alan Rickman's character.
Exactly. So Alan Rickman has a headpiece that he has to wear. And, you know, when he does these appearances, he shows up in costume.
Yeah.
And then he's a British actor who's done Richard III, you know, like I said. And that's like, you know, Patrick Stewart. I recall Patrick Stewart talking about he had some kind of a play that he was going to do, but he had done a screen test or whatever for Picard, and then it got picked up, and he was shocked that it got picked up, and he thought, this is not going to last very long, and didn't even move to L.A., I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just kept going on and on and on. And then, you know, next thing you know, it's the thing that he's known for. And that's got to be bittersweet for him, you know, because, you know, he should be thankful, you know, and I know that he is because I've seen a thing in which he, you know, he said that
I've
he was.
I heard him in, I'm trying to remember, it was from the I thought it was the BBC, but some interview that he did, I think it was one of the BBC radio stations has a show of like the five songs that the five pieces of music that influenced you most. I can't remember what it's called. And he was on that and I heard him and he was, if he resented it, he never said. He sounded like it was the wildest ride he'd ever had, and he enjoyed it. And that's there good. May have been yeah. something underneath. So I guess I never connected that with Picard because he didn't get caught in that. He was able to go right back because of the celebrity he enjoyed. And the fact that I think people looked at that show, The Next Generation, our actual culture had changed enough that was much more accepted as an acting thing.
Yeah,
and sure. You could go out of it and do something else than for those first Star Trek actors. And so, you know, because he did Macbeth.
Yeah, he hasn't had any trouble getting roles.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
He's gone back into the stage work or other movie work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I think, you know, William Shatner seems to have trouble. You know, what's funny about William Shatner is he's become like this parody of himself, and he seems to enjoy it. He seems to have embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, sometimes you wonder, is he oblivious to it? But I think he's plenty smart. I think that he knows exactly what he's doing. And, you know, he's got WilliamShatner.com and, I mean, all this stuff. And but he's done a couple of documentaries, one of which is called The Captains.
Really?
And it's interesting that he's doing that kind of thing because, and I did watch it. It shows
How
you
was
what
it?
Kind of a Star Trek fan I am. But, it you know, a lot of the Star Trek behind the scenes stuff just kind of ruins things. You know, you're just like, I really didn't need to know that people didn't like this guy
or whatever,
you know, that kind of stuff. But The Captains seems to be more for Shatner than anything else. Well, what it was is just him interviewing the other people who have been captains on Star Trek.
Okay.
And, you know, Patrick Stewart was one of them. And that's where I got, you know, a lot of this information, you know, it was okay. You know, it was fine.
Okay.
You know, it was interesting to see these people in that light, you know, and they're talking about the, you know, the long hours and things like that, which is, you know, like whatever, but
yeah.
You know, Patrick Stewart was interesting. I find him an interesting guy anyway. And he was saying that, when I die, what I'm going to be known for is Captain Picard. And he said, and that's okay with me.
Mm-hmm. He seems very well balanced.
Yeah, but it seemed like, you know, Shatner goes through this stuff where he's like, I don't know if I'm okay with this or not. Should I be? You know, and but, you know, and Leonard Nimoy has since, and I read this book, he wrote a book called I Am Spock. And it was basically him coming to grips with everything, you know, and Will Wheaton went through this too.
Yes.
Where he got hit at, you know, 18 years old and was like rejected the whole thing and was embarrassed by it, you know, like, you know, a teenager. And then later on in life said, you know, that was really something, and kind of reconnected with it, you know?
Yeah. He did a podcast where he was reading pieces of, whether it was that book, or he's written several books, and this must be it, where he wrote a book about what it was like to be part of that show.
Yeah, I've read a couple of them. He's got one called Just a Geek. I think the first one is called Dancing Barefoot. And then the second one he wrote is called Just a Geek, and it's a little bit longer. But they all kind of started because he started to blog, and he turned out to be a very talented writer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you read his blog and you're like, wow, this is a cut above everything. You know, he's really talented. And so they, you know, printed a couple of books based on, you know, I think there's other material in it too. But he kind of addresses how he felt then and how he feels now. And
because he said he had to get older to understand why young Wesley Crusher was getting hate mail. And I'm thinking, oh, really? I also truly hated Wesley Crusher. And he'll now go, which was the character he played.
Right.
And he'll go, I now understand that. I look at that show and go, what were they thinking? He goes, but at the time, I didn't know.
Yeah, and they didn't touch on that aspect of it. But actor named Daryl Mitchell plays an adult in Galaxy Quest. He was a kid on the show, and now he's an adult. But they really didn't deal with any of the issues. But that was clearly kind of a Wesley Crusher character.
Yeah, exactly. So they put all that together. And to get back to the movie, I would say everybody who's listened to this for very long, or if not, go look for the old episode. We did The Wrath of Khan, and that was a big movie, a much bigger movie than we would have thought. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had Heather Ordover on and talked about all these influences that went into it. And then I rewatched Galaxy Quest fairly soon after we did that show and went, oh my gosh, how did I never notice that that was basically the movie they chose to use and show similar themes, but in a different way? Because The Wrath of Khan, you know, dealt with aging, identity. Do you accept gracefully what's going on? How do you deal with crushing defeat? And this is all the same thing, but it's put in a more real life context while then yet going, there is the outer space aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you yourself as a person, what you've done and been your whole life, when you're tested, what happens? How do you stand up to it? Because I asked both my daughters, I said, if you had one thing that you would say about this movie, and Hannah said something that was so obvious that I had just kind of accepted it and not thought about it, which is, we never know what we're made of until we're tested. And I thought,
yeah, I love that. That's great. I love that. Yeah. Yep.
Because that's what, and it makes me think it goes together so well with the other themes of, because to me, the thing that I saw, which was things over and over and over, then get to the person we're going to be when the time for the big thing is called for. Mm. And that's a very Catholic idea of, you know, you practice the virtues. You try to be nice when the person cuts you off in line. You try to think the best of people. You know, you make the small sacrifices. You have your routines of trying to pray and, you know, connect with God and all these various things. And but when the big crises in life happen, have you done the small things enough that kind of kicks in like muscle memory, spiritual muscle memory in a sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what happens to these people, because they're one of the humorous things that eventually is a plot device is they keep going, oh, just like episode 27. And they'll go, what? Or like guys like episode 81. Are you sure it was episode 81? Well, I think so. Well, why do you care? That's the one where I was killed. Like, oh. And somebody else immediately says, no, I think it was episode 72. You know?
Yeah, maybe you're the plucky comic relief. Did you ever think of that? I love that. Yeah.
Well, that was kind of the other thing that I noticed that kind of was intertwined with all this is, what do others see in us that we don't see in ourselves? Because
yeah, there was a good scene that illustrated just that. Tim Allen, after, you know, in the opening scene, they're at this convention, you know, so he goes to the restroom and he's in a stall and he overhears some people talking about him and kind of how, you know, they see him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's up there, you know, pumping his fists in the air and, you know, just loving every minute of it. And they're making fun of him like, hey, doesn't he know that this is stupid? You know, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And
his friends are making fun of him behind his back.
Right. And it makes him, it changes his mood immediately, you know, of course, because he's like, well, maybe this isn't horrible.
It's a reality check of, wait, what am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but then there's stuff like the thing I was thinking of too, because that's a very obvious moment. But then the other thing where it's shown the other way is when Tony Shalhoub's character, Fred Kwan, he's turned into obviously a stoner or some equivalent thereof. You know, he's just not really there, but he's just having a great time with everything. But he's got to step up and work their equivalent of the Transformer. I don't know what it was. And get the captain out of this dangerous situation. And he's like, whoa, I can't do it. I can't. And but at the same time, while he's running for his life, Tim Allen's character is saying, you can. You never missed a mark. You were never late. You knew every line. And he's like, well, I'm not that guy anymore. He's like, yes, you are. It's there. I know it. And he's like, really? Do you think so?
Yeah.
And it's and he's then and then he sees the admiration of the girl looking at him, the alien girl.
Yep, yep.
He's like, okay, I'm going to do it because I want to look good in front of her. That gives me the confidence. And he believes in me. And he's got to do it. I mean, that gives him the strength to even step up and try.
Yeah.
And so between those two things are the extreme examples. But I kind of liked that idea of what we think of others and tell others and what they tell us. It says a lot. It informs us. And because that's the thing, too, about Guy, when he said, they say, well, maybe you're the plucky comic relief. And he changes how he's acting.
Yeah. And that's kind of that was a poignant moment. You know, it seems real flippant, but it was, you know, that happens to us in real life, too. If, you know, if we can look at our situation in a certain way, and it could change our whole attitude. Yeah, exactly. I love that about this movie. It's very positive, very optimistic movie.
Yeah, because did you notice that it made me think of, wasn't there a Ricky Gervais movie where nobody could lie about stuff?
The Invention of Lying or something like that.
Okay, and I didn't watch it because, as is the case, I find with a lot of Ricky Gervais's humor, it seemed rather mean-spirited a lot of it.
Well, it was, and it was very atheist as well.
Right.
The whole thing was a point, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's...
because religion was not possible if
right,
you
well,
lie.
It was the equivalent of, you know, a Christian movie where, in case you didn't get this, let me hit you with a hammer one more time,
yeah,
I
exactly.
felt like. I didn't see it, but that's what I...
That's absolutely true, yeah.
Okay, so, but it came to mind because I was thinking of these aliens who are so lovable and so trusting and so sweet and everything. They also can't lie. And they believe that the TV show they've seen beaming over the light years are historical documents. And so what they did is make come true this thing that was a great story that everybody would like to have be true. At least they think so until they're in the middle of it facing a horrific monster. But they, unlike the Ricky Gervais interpretation, they were still charitable. They were kind. They thought the best of other people. They had some kind of inner interpretation that didn't mean that telling the truth meant stripping away every bit of niceness and hope and possibility, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what they got from watching the, what is it, Galaxy Quest.
Right, right.
As opposed to, and that's what I think what people loved about Star Trek. It was that optimistic feeling.
Yeah.
And it's that, it's, so to think that you, by only telling the truth, it strips it down to facts. This movie kind of pointed out that it's the inner truths that we love about the show, too, that go with the adventure and the characters.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, it's incredibly true because, you know, the original series, I remember when The Next Generation came out. I remember that really well because I was in college and I remember us all getting together to watch that first episode.
Oh,
which was terrible.
Oh, yes. Deanna Troi looked like some galactic cheerleader. It was the worst thing ever.
I love John DeLancey, you know, but it was a Q episode and all that. And Patrick Stewart was over the top. I mean, it was tough.
Yeah.
We all left that one going, oh, boy, you know. But what's interesting is that, you know, Star Trek was such a huge hit, you know, constantly in reruns. You know, I've seen those episodes so many times growing up. And then they're going to say, oh, well, we're going to do it again. And my initial feeling was, how can they possibly do that again?
Right.
It was like Star Trek to me was those people and all this stuff. And then as The Next Generation started to gain its feet, and started to become that same type of a show in which there's optimism and a future that we want to be in. And the characters, I'm not saying that they're secondary because the characters are important, but it worked again, I think, because what they captured was the optimism. And then, you know, of course, the actors were good, right? But the reason that it worked again, and we were skeptical, I was anyway, that it could happen again, was because they went ahead and they hit that optimism. And I think that was, really important, you know. And then the other aspects of Star Trek, which I like, you know, was, I don't know, what, maybe one out of three episodes was really smart. You know,
yeah,
maybe a third of the originals were ones were like, wow, that was really a good story, you know, and a third of them are like just laughably, you know, like Spock's brain, you know, remember? Yes.
Oh my gosh. Then,
but the same kind of thing in the Next Generation. Planet,
that was the worst.
Yeah, exactly. But
Kirk loses his memory and goes around with his shirt off the whole time, which was a hilarious joke from Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, I see you managed to get your shirt off.
The rivalry between those two. Oh,
that's too funny.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of funny because I think I've mentioned this here before, but I can't remember that Hannah, our oldest daughter, started watching Star Trek, and she watched the entire.
Yeah, first, you mentioned that she was going to, but I haven't heard, you know, what she thought.
And she watched the first season and says, wow, all she knew was the parodies and the satires and everything. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh my gosh, Captain Kirk actually was quite good looking. I wasn't, what happened, you know? And then she said, this show was good.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking, she'd come in excitedly talking about, oh my gosh, this episode, do you remember this? And then we would kind of laugh over the bad ones. But then she started watching Next Generation, and she says, you know, when you watch one right after the other, because I had told her, I said, oh man, it had been so long. I was ready to watch anything if it was Star Trek, you know, kind of like you're saying. I'm like, and I was just excited that it was getting better as the series went on for the Next Generation. And she said, yeah, but you know what? You could tell it was done in a different time because it was still optimistic and all this, but they were kind of preachy and superior to a lot of the people. They kind of like to give them a little lecture along with everything else. I think
so, too. Yeah, and there's no doubt. I felt like, you know, I rewatched some of The Next Generation maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And the first season, there was a point at which I think that it clicked, and it was almost audible. I mean, you could watch it and say, oh, they finally figured it out, you know, about halfway in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an episode where Tasha Yar dies in that episode. Spoiler alert, right? But anyway, when she does, that was the episode, I think, where it started to work and Captain Picard became, you know, really captain-y.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And
yeah.
But yeah, I don't doubt that, you know, it was preachy and stuff at times. You know, I think TV is that way. But I loved the optimism. She
liked it. And what I was going to say is now she's gone on and she's watching Deep Space Nine, which was a particular favorite of mine. And
yeah, I mine really too. That was my favorite one out of all of them.
Yeah. And she was like, this is interesting. They did some different things with this.
Yeah.
And so in a sense, even though you couldn't have had that without the Next Generation thing, really.
Yeah, true.
But that's the thing where it's kind of like The Empire Strikes Back is really such a rich, deep movie if you're watching the whole Star Wars trilogy. Mm-hmm. She's like, Deep Space Nine is kind of that.
Yeah.
From her point of view.
I'd agree.
And which has kind of taken us far away from this movie, but it's all related,
but that's what this is about, you know,
but and that's of it part of why it that works. Optimism that made people want to sink their lives into it, which is why I loved the Quester nerds, those four kids.
Those are my people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love those people.
Yeah.
So,
did you see those people? You know, what one thing that they really didn't get right, I thought, in that the main nerd guy who's trying to, you know, he's
right.
You know, I didn't even get to the relevant conundrum. You know, he's he's trying to ask him, like, you know, hey, what about, you know, an episode, blah blah blah, you did this, and it seemed to contradict, you know, this book I have that shows me that this corridor or whatever, you know, which one is right? And Tim Allen at that point, you know, was upset, you know, so he kind of said, hey, this is just a TV show, and you know, I honestly don't know. I know a lot of people who like to buy the manuals. You know, clearly people are buying these. Heck, you know, they've got like Hamlet and Klingon you can buy. Yeah. Clearly somebody's buying this stuff, right? But I don't know many people. They acted as if this kid believed that all this was real. And I don't know that a lot of people think that it's real.
No, I think.
Yeah. Even if they're so totally into it, you know, there's a group here in Utah called, I can't remember, the Seventh Fleet or something like that, where they actually get together once a month in uniform and all that stuff. And, you know, I've met a lot of those folks. And, you know, they're very good folks, but I don't think that they're under some delusion that it was it's real. But I do, this is an interesting thing that I ran into a while back that I may have mentioned here or not, but there is this aspect of Star Trek, especially where it can be a religion replacement for people.
Oh,
and it doesn't mean that it's, they believe that it's true. It becomes kind of a mythic thing. And I've read some stuff about this. In fact, I saw Shatner at Comic-Con. I went to Comic-Con in Salt Lake City just last mm-hmm. week. And he was talking about how, why do we come here? Why do you guys come here to see me? He's like, you know, it's not really me that you're coming to see. You're coming to see each other. And that is really true. You know, that's really true. That's why I like to go to these things. But, you know, like, you know, I don't go to a lot of conventions where there are actors. I like to go to the ones where there's writers more. And there was writers at this one too. But anyway, but the whole point of this mythic quality that it seems to fulfill that piece of a lot of people's experience that I think is when, you know, you've gone too far with it. But I know that it's true. I would say that, heck, I almost went that way too, where it becomes so much a part of your life that you're, actually, you know, your life, it can only hold so much stuff, right?
Right.
So, you know, but it can surely take too big a role in your life.
Oh, yeah. Although one of the questions I did come away with from watching this movie was, what would happen if we lived by the values of Star Trek or other TV shows that, you know, grab you that way? Although I agree, I think Star Trek is fairly unique that way, the way the Thermians did.
Mm-hmm.
Because Star Trek really, if it showed the bad stuff, there was always a correction for it and a better way to think and be.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I never thought of that as being a religion replacement, but I do know exactly what you mean, where people are, you know, this world, for whatever reason, you feel rejected, you feel whatever, or you just don't have something that's a higher hope. And so that's got the optimism, the hope, the friendship, the loyalty, all those higher things that we all naturally aspire to.
Mm-hmm. And it's full of symbols.
Yeah.
And And as far as ritual goes, those are created by the fans.
Interesting.
You know, Shatner even said, you know, this coming to Comic-Con is like a ritual. Mm-hmm. I think he's actually going to do some kind of a documentary on this theory of why people are so connected to this stuff.
Well, and it also speaks to our need for community.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm sorry, but we are a Catholic podcast, so I'm going to go there. But, you know, the churches where very fierce individuality is preached a lot of the time, like, I don't need God. I can go be with these people and it's okay. Or I can go out in the woods and be by myself. That's not what Christ set up.
Mm-hmm.
Christ called people to him. He had over 500 disciples that seemed to travel around with him a lot until he was laying down some of the stuff they didn't want to hear, like about eating my flesh and drinking my blood. And what he left was people who were to go out and build community, because we need that. That's part of an innate need that we have. And I never thought about that in connection with the cons. But then the other thing it makes me think of is we just watched, I got a review copy of Father Robert Barron's Catholicism, the New Evangelization, it's like a 90-minute documentary. But it's also set up with other DVDs that have longer interviews with various people and clips that you can show in accompaniment with a workbook in case a parish wanted to do it. Or you can do it as an individual thing. But we just watched the documentary part. But one of the things, because they were talking to a lot of young Catholics who'd started various lay ministries. And if you're not Catholic, that just means you're not a priest, which, as they point out, priests are a very small percentage of the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what gets done by lay people. And what the younger ones were pointing out, and they did this in Australia, which is a highly secularized society, is if you just listen to what the secular world tells you, you don't have hope. They say, well, this is very hard to do, so don't even try. And they're like, that's what leads to us being depressed, us not caring, us not trying. We have nothing higher and better to reach for. And that's why it's really important for those of us who have found the joy and love and strength of a relationship with Christ through, and especially through the Catholic Church, to reach out and tell people about what we found, that this is great. Don't, you would like this too. Mm-hmm. You know, not you should be doing this, but oh my gosh, I want you to have it also. Yeah. And that's what these people are living out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Huh.
That's an interesting connection. I never would have made that.
Yeah, it's you know, I've been to a lot of conventions, you know, not as many as a lot of people, but I sure like them. And community is really what it is. I mean, mm-hmm. Shatner nailed that one, because it is true that, you know, when I go to a convention, you know, a local SF con, I'm looking forward to seeing everybody that I see every year at the con.
Okay.
You know, that's who I really want to see. And then when they have a guest that I would like to listen to, you know, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm. But that's the draw for a lot of people is, you know, who the guest is and everything. And, but, you know, I went to Worldcon one time with Jesse from SFF Audio, and that was great. But what was great about that, I can't even recall everybody that we saw, as in famous writers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What I remember was the parties in the guys who did Podio Books and what's Timor that? Escape Pod. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve Ely and them.
Steve Ely.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time with that group. And
that's neat.
Yeah, see, that was what you remember there. So it's like, this is just a place for us to gather.
Yeah, and I guess that's because there's a Worldcon that happened here in August, or in San Antonio,
yeah.
In August, and at one point we were talking about going, and I think the funny thing, I wanted to meet you in person.
Oh, yeah.
But also the SFF Audio guys were talking about it, and I was like, oh, I could meet Jenny and Tamahome and Jesse. And for me, what's kind of funny is Jesse's like, no, I'm not going to the United States again because I had a bad thing with customs one time. And I get that. But, you know, when he said that, it was like the oomph went out of it.
Right, right.
And I was like, yeah, because I wasn't wanting to go because I wanted to see Worldcon. So I have, you know, I wanted us to get together.
Yeah.
And everything else would be fun, too. But it's the getting together with people that you don't ever get to talk to or meet.
Right.
You know, those
right.
are the people that, although I don't know them, I love them in a way.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. And I've met Jesse. I mean, shoot, we've been, I think it was 2003, we started SFF Audio.
Right.
And we had never met. And Worldcon is where we met in person.
That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's stuff that you get to know about people through just even being around them that you just can't learn or do during
true.
Skype conversations.
That's really true. You know, you and I have never met, which probably amazes some people.
Yeah, which, and it kind of amazes me, actually.
It is funny, yeah. But there is just something about meeting in person that changes things, you know. And that's an interesting statement about, you know, where we're headed as far as, you know, the internet and connectivity and all this stuff, and what can it really replace? And, you know, some of that stuff I really feel like is a little bit overblown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people that are on Facebook usually do meet other people in person, you know? So I don't know, you know, I think that a lot of the worry about it is probably not really justified. Some of it certainly is, but, again, you know, our church teaches moderation, right?
Right.
Again, you know, if you do Facebook in moderation, that's fine. But I think Facebook gets dangerous when you do stuff in order that you can post it, in order that people will like you. That is not a very good dynamic. It's not healthy.
Right.
But other than that, you know, what most people I think use Facebook for is probably just fine. I'm not a fan of it, but
yeah, it's not. But really
I don't
my
think
thing,
that it's like dangerous to society. You know what I mean?
No, because it's just a tool like any other tool. And the, the question is, how much priority do you give it in your life?
Right.
You know, do you spend all your time on Facebook or do you spend all your time watching TV? Are either of those things you should do all the time? I mean, because then you hear about people, you talk about moderation. Then there are certain people I know who, oh, I got rid of my TV. Oh, I don't even, you know, and I'm like, how do you guys watch movies? We plug in the computer. I'm like, oh, what a great experience. I don't care how big your computer screen is. No, you know.
That's funny.
And they're, but they won't even open up to the possibility that this may have something good on it that you might want to see occasionally. It's like those people who, oh, no dancing in our religion, no drinking, because that might lead us to sin.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's what I like about the Catholic Church is that it goes, okay, these things we're putting behind a picket fence because this is a problem. These things are bad for you. No murder, because they're bad for everyone. Mm-hmm. No adultery, no, the, you know, all these various things. But there's so much that they're like, you know what? Some people can handle it. Most people can handle it. Some people can't. Mm-hmm. We're going to let you decide that for yourself. The dancing, the drinking, the whatever, because it's, is it in proper proportion in your life? And I think that's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of funny thinking about Galaxy Quest is what happens by these guys getting taken on a real life adventure, which we've not even talked about at all, but by them having to test themselves and see what they're really made of, they go beyond what everybody thinks of them. And they kind of learn to have a healthy proportional attitude toward that fan adulation. And, you know, it's like when they come out at the end and they're like, oh, I'm, where am I? I just went through this huge adventure. I now know who I am. I have a sense of proportion about these various pieces of my life.
Yeah. I think that that's something that, is a good lesson for us too, in that, if we feel complacent and bored and everything, you know, with our life the way it is, well, you know, go do something.
Yeah.
Go do something. You know, we don't need to wait for aliens to come to our door and say, we need your help. You know, I think that, you know, you can get that excitement from what you're doing, you know, like at work or something like that. If, you know, you could do a different project or maybe even change a job or something like that, where it can give you a renewed enthusiasm. And I think that if you're walking around without any enthusiasm, that, you know, maybe it's something that you're doing that needs to change. It's not the world doing this to you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's kind of, you're illustrating to me, you know, that exact thing. You know, these people were all in a rut. You know, they can give up on going to try to get roles. You know, I imagine, you know, what happens after this movie is that these guys, well, they showed a little bit that the series came back on, but you'd think that, well, these guys would be, you know, pretty gung-ho and confident and ready to go get some other roles and things because of this experience that they had. And I think that that's a real life thing. It happens in life too. If you get some success and you do something that's exciting, it spills over on everything.
And they were at peace with themselves. You feel like if they'd have been offered the show coming back before they had their real adventure, they would have all taken those old attitudes into it.
Yeah.
Whereas you feel like with this, they're like, okay, but I know who I am. So it doesn't matter. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and the other thing that makes me think of Sigourney Weaver, whose part was so great when she's like, look, I have one job to do. It's stupid, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to repeat what the computer says, which is kind of the attitude they take that Laredo has to take when he's like, what should I do? And they're like, practice driving. What? You're going to rescue people. And okay. But he does it. Mm-hmm. He goes and he does it. And it's integral in the end. And so, although that doesn't happen with Sigourney Weaver's role, you kind of go in your own life, well, but I should do this with gusto.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's finding a new job because this job is not what I need, or just even, you know, we get into our own ruts in regular life. When's the last time that somebody went to, I don't know, their downtown and walked around and looked at the architecture on the old buildings that are left or whatever might interest them?
Yeah.
You know, we have to do that with our Tom and I have to do that sometimes. Yeah, with stuff.
Sure. There was a Martin Luther King anniversary recently. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I heard while everybody was kind of doing retrospectives and things was a speech that he gave where he was saying, you know, if you're a street sweeper, you be the best street sweeper that ever has been.
Right.
You know, it's like you attack what you've got with gusto and you you do the very best that you can. You be the, you know, you strive to be the best. And it was a really inspiring talk.
You know, because we need great street sweepers. And if we all tried to do the very best we could, I think that would also change things. Because that changes your inner attitude about everything. Just like, you know.
Yeah, it does.
You have pride in what you do. Everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does, you know, work its way into the rest of your life as well. This optimism and this enthusiastic engagement with things.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've gone through a lot of times where I'm just like, oh, you know, just going through motions at work and not doing the best that I can, you know, just waiting for 5 o'clock. But, you know, this movie kind of shows that, you know, hey, if you can break out of that a little bit, that's one of the things that I like about it is, you know, I watch it and I come out of it every time I see it. I actually watched it twice in preparation for this podcast. Because it was like it ended and I'm like, I'm going to start that over because I just loved it.
I do too. Love it's this movie. It's so much fun because it's so smart and it doesn't condescend to the characters.
No, not at all.
It could have made it stupid and it didn't.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say just the actors were great too, but go ahead and finish your point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, now I can't remember, but when speaking of the actors, they were also so inventive about, I mean, that, I can't remember his name, but that monstrous captain who was
Saris,
how could I have forgotten that? Mm-hmm. Was that not the best horrible, it was like, this doesn't sound scary at all, but like, it's like it's like a cross between a huge, like a grasshopper, cockroach, lobster kind of but fierce.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, he was scary.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle with a lot of miles on him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Just, they were so creative about all that stuff.
They really were. And the effects were neat. I mean, they did a good job.
Oh yeah. Really well, a terrific and they, job. Even the mimicking of things like having from the Wrath of Khan of having to go into the asteroid field or that cloud that in the Wrath of Khan they'd go into that would break down communications.
Exactly.
And this is a huge minefield, but it requires their ingenuity and thinking a way the others wouldn't think. You know?
And they're just, they're playing off all these tropes that have been set up by these movies, you know, like, you know, you're getting missiles shot at you, it's getting hit, you're bouncing around.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to get the call from the engineer that says, we're breaking up, you know. So they get old Tony Shalhoub, hey, these guys, they're telling me that we're going to bust up and things. So it's FYI.
They're like, okay, we need to do this. And he goes, that's another one, right, guys? Come on, group hug.
That's one thing I say all too often, I'm sure, for the people around me is you know, Shalhoub, he gets on there and he says, hey, we found this beryllium sphere. It's on this other planet and we can go get it, you know. And then Tim Allen says, we'll do that. Because he had no idea what to do. Yeah, exactly. So I say, we'll do that. That came from this movie. I've said it for years. We'll do that.
I know. You know, just the whole thing, how they played on all that stuff, like, you know, the aliens who are mining the beryllium spheres so handily, they look like the most adorable little creatures ever. And Sigourney Weaver's like, oh, look, let's go talk to, you know, and Guy grabs her and says, did you guys ever watch the show?
Yeah, that was
like,
so good.
Am I the only one who sees this as playing out exactly like a Ben episode?
Oh man.
But I think it works. I'd be curious to hear from somebody who never saw it, who didn't get involved in all that other stuff. It must communicate on lots of levels just as a great, funny, loving movie anyway, because it was a huge hit, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, my daughter loved it. She's seen some Star Trek. I accidentally have, you know, exposed her to some of that.
Accidentally. Good for you. That's what a good father does.
But, you know, she's not like a huge fan or anything. And but she loved this movie. She thought it was great.
Yeah, that's it's just, and that's kind of also the real skill that came together here, is that it's not only the loving tribute and the hilarious satire at the same time. Satire might be a little too hard-edged, but to call it, but it also just works as a great movie about people.
It really does,
all that stuff.
Yeah, Alan Rickman's journey in this movie was really interesting, you know, because he felt, you know, horrible about everything. And then that's, you know, I, you know, clearly I don't know Leonard Nimoy's inner thoughts or anything like that, but it seems to me that he went through something really similar where he was just like, oh, this is horrible, to, oh, the, you know what? This is really great. I get the feeling now that he really likes Spock, and he really likes that he played him, and just, you know, but I know that he went through a lot of difficulty because of it too.
But it's kind of that thing of doing the little things and not seeing how they might influence people greater. To him, Spock was a character he played, and then he tried to get away from it because it held him back from other things, and he was so stereotyped. But that's what I love, of course, as you're saying, what they show about Alexander Dane, who is Alan Rickman's character, that at least to this one person, and who knows to how many others, he was the father figure this guy never had.
Yeah.
He modeled his life after all those wonderful ideals that he wasn't given from anywhere else. And so when he's shown that in the most graphic of ways, he's able to embrace it because he realizes that he did matter. What he did that he thought was nothing was actually something.
Yeah. And then, you know, as far as I remember, it was some Star Wars anniversary, and Alec Guinness played
Obi-Wan.
Yeah, that's right. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Yes. And I remember hearing a story where he said that this young, or this woman and her young son saw him somewhere, and she was, you know, the boy clearly was very excited. So they went over to him, and the mom really, you know, just beaming with pride, said he's seen Star Wars like 100 times. And, you know, Alec Guinness was horrified. He was like,
he's a great actor.
You know, why would you watch this 100 times? You know, watch something else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I just can only imagine, you know, that some of the fandom must really make these guys question, you know, like, was this really, you know, a good thing to do, or was it right, or, you know, you know, it's just, it's, you know, but most people have a good balance to it, but you know, I don't know. It just seems to me, you know, going to Comic-Con and stuff, and you see these guys sitting behind desks, you know, charging money for their autographs. It's gotta be a really strange thing. It's gotta be a really strange thing.
I have to say, one of the images of going to cons that I have that kind of changed how I looked at it, and this is going to sound really stupid, is I watch Castle. It's a guilty pleasure. You know, I started watching it because of Nathan Fillion. I continue watching it because of Nathan Fillion. I'm just a fan. And his character is unabashedly in love with all kinds of popular culture. You know, some murder happens. He helps the detectives at the police force in New York, and some murder happens, and he's like, oh, it could be werewolves. And suddenly everything's about werewolves. Well, this is where he's actually a popular author, and so he's signing autographs at some convention, and a murder happens at the convention. It's in a science fiction setting. And he's like, I watched this show forever. Oh, my gosh. And so it's a very, very small, unfunny version, funny sometimes, of a con and this kind of a movie. But it was his complete enthusiasm and love and of the whole thing that made me go, oh, okay, I get it. That it was kind of the community thing, because they'd run, he'd run into other people and they'd go, oh, like this, and he'd go, I know, right? And somehow that communicated it for me in a way that I guess Galaxy Quest does not do about from the fans' point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It did make me want to go to a con sometime.
Yeah, we definitely need to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Sometime we've got to travel to, we've got to meet at just one somewhere.
You betcha.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool, very cool.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great movie choice.
Yes, well, thanks. You know, I didn't think it, you know, it was too deep themed, but just one of my all-time favorites. And it was nice to, you know, we got a horror coming up. Three horror things in a row.
A lot of horror.
Yeah, horror. Yes. Yep. Which I'm really excited about, you know, because you know I love it. October's coming. Oh,
me too. Although I wouldn't say that, somehow I don't think of World War Z as being horror. And I'll bring it up to people and they'll say, oh, zombie book. And I'm like, well, kind of.
Yeah, but more. Not yeah. Again, really. I haven't gotten any farther in it than the last time we spoke, you know, so I'll start reading that after. I'm reading The Prestige, which is really, really good. One of my favorite audiobooks of all times. So this is actually a re-listen. I got the hard copy. And I was, you know, I haven't even cracked it open because I'm listening to it. And the audiobook is so good. It's read by Simon Vance. And there's just no reason to read the print.
Well, and I have to say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Simon Vance... amazing narrator to the point where Rose was bringing him up to me a couple weeks ago because she's listening to his narration of Bleak House.
Oh, wow. Which cool.
Must be astounding.
It must be, yeah.
And then I was just to something extra, which we're not, don't have any time for, but I'm going to do it anyway, is that SFF Audio this week has a reading of an H.G. Wells story by him and then him on it. Hmm. And then I hear through Jesse that he's going to be on next week talking about a lot of other stuff.
Oh, that's great.
So heads up on the SFF Audio front.
Very cool. Very cool.
And The Prestige is a movie that I felt was not, I didn't like it as much as some people. But it did make me kind of interested in the book when I knew that you guys are reading it because you're going to talk about it.
Yeah, we'll talk about it on SFF Audio, right?
Okay.
And the book is sufficiently different from the movie. I mean, the movie's got some surprises, right? But the book is sufficiently different.
Well, and my problem with the movie was really just that I never connected with either of the two characters. I watched it kind of, I felt more like it was an intellectual exercise. I didn't care about anybody that much.
Uh-huh.
So I felt like Christopher Nolan fell down on the job there.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Sorry, Christopher, because you're not a huge fan. Anyway, yep. So moving on.
Yeah. But anyway, so after that, then I'll finish World War Z.
Okay.
But I love
World War Z so far. You've got 2 weeks, no pressure.
No, that's not a problem. No problem. So, but yeah, and then after that, we're going to watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, yes.
Which is Guillermo del Toro.
Yes. A rich tapestry of fantasy set against the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And then we're going to read The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah, we're going steadily downhill in terms of we're heading towards horror faster and faster. And we land with a splash.
Which is
with
perfect because that'll go up on October 31st.
Yeah.
Which I hear that's an important day somehow, but I'm not sure why.
In the podcasting world that we know anyway.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
Love October. This is my favorite time of year. I'm starting to get really energetic and excited.
Me too. Me too. Yeah. That's going to be great.
I love it. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Watch Galaxy Quest if you haven't. I'm sure you have.
Yeah, go watch it again, though. I don't think you can watch it too many times.
For sure. So. Yeah.
It's and have a great
it's impossible.
Couple weeks.
Yeah. All right. Let's get out of here before someone kills Guy.
Oh, hurry. Run. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Thank you.